Finally. It's been a while.
Yeah, your refrigerator evaporated.
This is going to take a longer walk for it. So I got ice now, at least.
Well, hello, everybody. It is August 13th. You're listening to the Scary Dad Podcast, episode 96.
Man, we got to figure out what we're going to do for 100. We still haven't decided.
I haven't been around.
Yeah, I know.
we'll figure it out off the mic or during a show. We'll come. We'll have an epiphany. We'll figure it out. But yeah, like I said, episode 96. This one will be titled "Best of the Bad." We're going to talk about some villains today. The villains that outshine. Or if they don't outshine, they at least chew up the scenery and they make you really wish that you kind of root for the bad guy sometimes.
Yeah. You get engaged with the character to where you're impressed by it, I guess you could say. You know, it's you're not necessarily empathetic to the character, but you realize it's a badass character.
Exactly. And I've got a good list, too.
There's some great villains out there, man. They're written in the movies. It's...
Well, yeah, so we'll get into that, but what we're talking about, while it's only been 1 week since you heard a Scary Dad podcast, it's been a month since we actually recorded an episode.
Vacations and everything else getting in the way.
Just little things. I came back from vacation and then had a work function, and then prior to that, it was a sick week, and then just something keeps coming up. And
so some of the new business you hear in this episode may not be new to you, but it's new to us as far as discussing it at this time.
But we're going to get into it. As always,
first, the old business.
We're going to get right into the old business. So on this date, August 13th, 1521, conquistador Hernan Cortes conquers the Aztec capital of Tenochtitlan. That's one of those things, whenever you go to junior high school in Texas, you learn Texas history, and a significant chunk of it is actually Mexican history, mm-hmm. because by the time Texas, as we know it now, was kind of discovered, colonized, and explored, it was converged upon by the Spanish from the south, you know, the French and the British from the east. There's all kinds of different people coming in from different directions. So, of course, they throw back and explain to you how those people came to be there. But the conquistadors conquered the Aztecs in what is now Mexico City. And completely, you know, there was not very many of them. And they took out the Aztecs pretty thoroughly. And
well, not that it was advanced, but they had technology at that time on their side and everything. And I could see where it would be easy to vanquish that particular enemy.
Plus, they were already inside the walls. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like they were attacking from the outside. Right. They had hostages and all that stuff. Okay, 1553, a man named Michael Servetus was arrested as a heretic and burnt at the stake. And you'd say, who is Michael Servetus? He's one of those early intellectuals. He was the first person to actually map the pulmonary system. And but he had some views about the way religion was going, and they didn't like that, so they burnt him on a pyre, and the pile was his books, his personal library. So insult to injury.
It's messed up.
Yeah, not good. In this date in 1868, a major earthquake hit southern Peru, and there was around 25,000 people killed. And it created a tsunami so big it hit Hawaii and New Zealand.
Damn.
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
That's a nice span. It's not like New Zealand and Hawaii are next to each other.
No, they're not. In 1889, the coin-operated telephone was patented. So you didn't have phones for very long before you had to drop a dime.
They knew how to make money with it, man. You know what's funny is Halliburton, when I worked over there, they had a payphone in the office up until about, let's say, 2012. It never got used because everybody, Halliburton provided cell phones to all their employees. So there was, but they still had a payphone sitting on the second floor
when,
just in case.
when I first started with my company in 2004, so it's remote office, right? So our home office is in North Carolina, but we are hired, we're getting a computer, internet access, a cell phone, and basically, you know, you input your information and you upload it to the database. But we had a voicemail system that had been in use since, I guess, the late 70s. And it was still company policy that it was mandatory that you check your voicemail at least twice a week. And if you didn't, there would be, you know, a report would come out saying who's not checking voicemail. And it was this convoluted thing where you had to dial the voicemail number and then wait and then put in like a two-digit code and then a four-digit code and then wait, and then it would be like, you have no new messages. And you had to do that twice a week. It was ridiculous. They finally phased that out, you know. But for the longest time, I was like, why do we have to do this? They're like, it's just company policy. It's just built into the system.
Right.
And these giant organizations, they don't, you know, they provided cell phones for us, or, you know, you got your own and they paid for it. But it's like, everybody has cell phones. You're mandated. You have to have a cell phone, but you also have to call into the voicemail system. All right. This date in 1913, the first production of stainless steel. It's in everything. Like, almost all knives are made out of stainless steel. Yeah. Almost everything that's made out of steel anymore is made out of stainless. And it's hard to believe that it's been around for, you know, just a little over 100 years.
Yeah.
In 1942, the Manhattan Project was authorized. So they were already starting to work on the bomb in 42. Now, to take not having the bomb to having the bomb in less than 3 years, pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that they were seeking it out that early on,
right,
is pretty crazy. This date in 1961, construction begins on the Berlin Wall. Can't have all those people who don't want to live here leave.
Leave, right. Just keep them in.
And in 1967, two young women were the first fatal bear attacks in 57 years in Montana's Glacier Bay National Park.
Wow.
It was two separate incidences, two separate bears, but on the same day, and they were the first in almost 60 years to be attacked by bears.
It's a good safety run, honestly.
It really is.
Too bad the John Cleese lookalike wasn't around.
I know, he would have just beat the hell out of him.
Throw hands with
him. It would have beat him down. All right, notable births on this date in 1889. Alfred Hitchcock. Good evening. This date in 1926, Fidel Castro was born. If only he'd gotten into baseball, who knows how the world would look.
It made a different place.
And in 1930, you remember Don Ho?
Yeah.
The singer.
Hawaiian singer.
Tiny Bubbles. He's known for one song, but internationally famous for one song. All right. And notable deaths on this date in 1946... Author H.G. Wells passed away. lots and lots of stuff came from him. The Invisible Man, the Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yeah.
So many more. The Time Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Science fiction.
He was ahead of his time, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Science fiction would not be the same without Mr. H.G. 1995, we lost baseball great Mickey Mantle. 2004, we lost Julia Child. The
cook.
The cook with the funny voice. 2009, guitar inventor and player Les Paul. I actually have him play a Gibson Les Paul.
Okay.
And in 2016, Mr. R2-D2, Kenny Baker.
Kenny Baker.
And that is it for old business. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with some new.
Want to go psycho with me, Elvira, here at the Bates Motel? Look for me wherever they sell mug root beer. And enter the Go Psycho with Elvira contest. You can be my guest at Universal Studios in Hollywood for a monstrous bash at the Bates Motel. Shower anyone? This Halloween, go psycho with Elvira and win a party with mug root beer and me.
I love my mug.
I love it.
Glorious day.
And the complete breakfast with
Booberry.
Huh? Into the waves, Boo.
Bye bye. Frankenberry has strawberry flavored sweeties.
Count Chocula has chocolate sweeties.
And Booberry with berry flavored sweeties.
And here are the mini monsters. 5 monsters in all. You can trade them with friends and put on a show. 1 mini monster in specially marked boxes of the monster cereals.
All right. We're back.
We're back. All right. So now it's time to get into a little bit of...
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, so we have Romeo and Juliet playing in the background this evening for a particular reason. Of course, this movie was written by none other than James Gunn. And as you know, James Gunn has recently been a shit can from being director of the Guardians of the Galaxy series.
Fired from Disney, period.
Bunch of bullshit.
Oh, for sure.
You know, looking at his resume, this is a trauma movie. He had that type of sense of humor. You know, they knew what they were getting into when they hired him to do the first Guardians of the Galaxy. The man is obviously exceptionally talented at what he does, and you fire him for a bunch of old bullshit? It's getting out of hand, dude.
The retroactive censorship.
It's getting out of hand.
It's like if this is a problem, then make it whenever you hire the guy. You know what I mean? It's like, right. We did a background check. We saw some sketchy stuff in your past, but they're also Disney, so they mm-hmm. could have gone back. They could have spent probably $48 and gone back and scrubbed it to where it never happened.
Right.
You know. You think Disney rolling over to Twitter, being like, "Hey, make this not happen."
But to so quickly be judgmental and fire the man for that, without him, you know, being able to defend himself at all, it's a bunch of bullshit. And the thing about it is, Mike Rooker just dropped off of Twitter altogether. He just like, screw this. This is a bunch of bullshit. It should not be allowed. And this isn't going to stop here. It's going to get worse.
Well, you heard what happened to Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
So Chris Hardwick. His ex-girlfriend wrote a
scathing editorial.
Well, it was in anonymous. She didn't name him, and basically accused him of being a shitty boyfriend and then blacklisting her from future work. And I read her article. I read what she wrote, and I also went to Twitter and I saw everybody tearing him apart, and I could tell that the people that were tearing him apart had not read the article. They had just read her essay. All they had done was, he was accused, so he obviously has to be guilty. Right. Well, he was pulled off of his shows and...
Lost his Comic-Con panels.
Lost his panels, but he's been recently reinstated. So I read that article too. AMC and I think 2 other agencies, independently of each other, all did investigations, talking to people... acquaintances, and the 3 of them were not aware of each other. So there was no collusion among them. They wanted to make sure. And they found nothing. Nothing at all that would indicate that he blacklisted her. It's one thing if it's like, okay, well, you mess with the wrong dude, I'm going to make sure you don't work in this town again. That's a shitty thing to do. And I don't know if it's necessarily worth getting fired because, you know, you piss off a boss, they're like, you can't come back to work here anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, but the whole rest of it, him being possessive and kind of weird about sex, I mean, who hasn't been like that in right. some relationship in the past? You come home, you're in a bad mood, you know, they want it, you don't, so you kind of go through the motions because you've had a long day, but you're just, you know, rather deal with it than fight or something. Everybody's been in that situation, and she basically accused him of being a bad boyfriend and got his ass fired.
Right.
Tried to bring down a media empire. And then he was fully reinstated, but he'll have that smear on him the rest of his life.
Right.
Because people will always be like, well, maybe.
Yeah. You know? They'll always be cautious about it. But Michael Rooker came out, you know, I love Michael Rooker. I'm friends with his agent that handles him for cons and everything. I've worked with him before. I've spent time with him. He's an awesome dude. And when he quit Twitter, his final tweet was, "This account will be inactive after today. We're very tired and upset over the ongoing bullshit. Neither I nor my rep will use Twitter again. Twitter sucks, and I want nothing to do with it. Thank you again to all who gave kind words of support. See you on Instagram." And it's just... I've seen articles as of late where it's gone into the corporate world. People who have recently been given, you know, major jobs at corporations, people are going and digging through their social media history, and because of shit they did years ago with baseball players. There's like 3 baseball players right now, they're in hot water because people went through and found old tweets they sent out when they were in high school,
mm-hmm.
and they're being lambasted for it now.
Well,
we grew up before social media.
Oh, dude.
And I'm sure both of us have said some stupid shit back in the day that we regret saying and we've changed since then.
Well, there's things that you said that you actually meant 10 years ago.
But you don't feel the same way now.
But you don't feel that way anymore. Like, there is a live and learn. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just one of those things. Like, you never know somebody until you meet somebody. You know, I've always told people that, you know, if they have an opinion, like, on, for example, on gay people, it's like, well, how many gay people do you know? And I don't mean, like, the guy that works in your office. I mean, like, how many people do you know that you're friends with that you see on a regular basis? And most anybody that has anything negative to say will say none. Right?
Right.
So if you have no experience, you have it's an unfounded opinion. It's an opinion, but it doesn't mean you can't change.
Right.
And it doesn't mean you can't change your heart and your mind whenever new material, new information comes your way. And people...
The thing about
Rooker, though, he's mad at Twitter. What happened with Gunn was, and this is why it was... Gunn was brought down by a guy named Mike Cernovich.
Yeah.
Mike Cernovich is a... I don't know anything about him because I read a couple articles. Mike Cernovich is kind of like one of those alt-right guys. So, Cernovich was kind of on a crusade saying that the left doesn't treat their own people the same way they treat people on the right.
Yeah.
So if somebody
went looking for people.
So if somebody on the right says something stupid, they get lambasted in the media and will have their careers destroyed. So he went and he dug up shit on a couple of different folks and was like, look at this guy. Because James Gunn is a vocal, he's a vocal lefty, let's say. He's vocally left-leaning and he's critical of the president. So Cernovich went and found stuff in Gunn's past and threw it up there to be like, hey, pot kettle, what's up with this? And of course, reaction was swift and brutal. But it's not Twitter's fault.
Well, Rooker wasn't mad at Twitter. The reason he quit Twitter was because of the Twitter users.
The people on Twitter.
And the reaction they were having and the tweets he was having to read about his friend.
Yeah.
That's the reason he quit Twitter, which I understand, because it's mob mentality.
But all
it's
same
the lynch mob all over again.
Well, and I don't like Twitter anyway because it's so... It, to me, it's like an idol to ADD. Right. It's like a big tribute to short, unthought out thoughts. So you can be drunk and stupid and say something and get a laugh, and then 10 years later, it can cost you a job being the director of Guardians of the Galaxy.
And the thing about it is his tweets. I don't know if you read the tweets that he made. It wasn't anything worse than I've seen a lot of stand-up comics do. And for some, stand-up comedy is still fairly pure in the fact that you can make tasteless jokes and you won't lose your job over it. You can say stupid shit, you know, in the name of comedy, of your art. That's all it was. It was tasteless jokes he was saying that a stand-up comedian would say. And it drives me nuts that this has gotten to this point where someone as talented as this guy, he started off at Trauma. The script for Romeo and Juliet, he sold to Trauma for $150. And then he went on to direct Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2. You know, think about that. The guy is an incredibly talented guy who has busted his ass to get to where he is. And it's all gone because of some tasteless jokes that he made.
Yep.
It just pisses me off.
Oh, it does me too.
So we spent plenty of time there. Okay. So, as you know, I have become a huge fan of the Chewing It podcast. With Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy from the Broken Lizard Gang. Well, a recent episode, they brought up a review they had of Super Troopers 2. There's a Christian movie review website that is hilarious. Just so you know. And I went through it. I actually found a couple of movies where they refused to review because they just saw the trailers of it. And they quoted a couple of Bible verses saying that they did not want to put themselves through having to watch this movie for the benefit of the audience. They were just going to let the audiences know, don't watch this movie. But these cats actually sit there and they'll watch a movie. And decided to find a horror movie that they did. They did the Friday the 13th reboot. Okay? What's funny is, you know, of course the movie was recommended not for anybody at all. But they go through and they do the positive elements, spiritual content, sexual content, and then they do violent content.
So this is the Christian people did the review on Friday the 13th?
They did the review on the Friday the 13th remake. It was hilarious is in the violent content part, they went through with each kill, and they actually had victim 1, victim 2, victim 3, all the way through victim 13, where they describe each kill. It is awesome, dude.
That's killer.
I would recommend you check it out. The website is pluggedin.com. And the one they did for Super Troopers 2, I love about it is they also talk about bad language, of course. And they go through, this is no bullshit, they actually count the curse words. And this is for Super Troopers 2. This is their synopsis on the crude or profane language. More than 60 F words and 30 S words join a handful of uses each of H/B/CH and A/. God's and Jesus' names are misused over a dozen times each, with at least 10 pairings of God's name with D-N. They talk about drug and alcohol content, other negative elements. It's worth a check. Just check it out.
They
review Deadpool 2. They review all these movies. It's like, why do you even bother? But they go each one. They go through. They count all the curse words. They describe the scenes. That's what's funny, is they describe like the nudity scenes and everything and the sex scenes and stuff. It's
almost sounds like it should be a joke.
Yeah,
but it's real.
It's serious, man.
It's funny when I was a kid. So. We did an early on show about the unnecessarily scary 80s.
Yes.
But you know what else the 80s had a lot of? I think if you were going to get a PG or a PG-13 movie, you were allowed to use the F word at least one time. And maybe you could trade two S words for a second F word. You know, and I'm speaking in like these guys' vernacular here. But remember in the 80s, in a lot of movies that were otherwise clean, you'd have that one kid that would just be like, what the fuck? You know, and you'd be like, and like, it would almost like
it's shock almost, you.
It's a little jarring because it was out of contest and you know, out of context or whatever. But man, like then you'd have other movies, for example, like Platoon. I remember watching Platoon, sitting there watching it with my dad, and that movie's full of the F word. My poor mother, every time somebody would drop an F bomb, she'd be like,
it would jar her.
Yeah. But she was doing it because I, you know, kids were in the room or like whatever. Because when I think when Platoon came out, I was like 11, you know, like fucking Barnes. And like sometimes it would, if it was got too much, she'd be like, I can't believe you're watching this trash. And I'd be like, Mom, if you wouldn't put an accent on all the cuss words, I wouldn't even notice. But you're like punctuating them, like
making it a big deal.
But just like that, just like sitting there and listen for the bad words. Oh, there's one. Rewind it. Did he really say that?
Like, we're just like when you
you're exposing yourself even more.
When your kids are young, whenever like, you know, a kid accidentally says shit, depending on how you react, you may never say it again. But if you overreact, you know, he's going to get a reaction. So he's going to say shit again. You know, yeah. He's going to repeat it. Okay. Speaking of Super Troopers, I don't know if you heard this story yet, but this is going to remind you of the first Super Troopers. Remember the bear fucker? Okay. Imagine you're driving to work one morning, okay, and you're going through this, like, serene area with a bunch of pastures and fields and shit, and you look off to the left, and you see 29-year-old Tyler Schlosser butt naked in the middle of a field having intercourse with a pony. Which is what an Oklahoma woman observed while on her way to work one morning. About 8:45 a.m. on a Wednesday, 30 miles east of Tulsa, Oklahoma. She went ahead, she called a friend of hers, she says, hey, do me a favor, go check out on Route whatever it is and see if I actually saw what I think I saw. So this lady goes over with her daughter, walks out by the pasture, and sees Tyler Schlosser butt naked doing it with a horse. So she calls the cops while she's out there, and her daughter starts filming it with her phone, and the cops show up, and the guy, he dismounts and starts walking towards everybody like, hey, what's going on? I'm just screwing a horse. You know what's funny is another thing, listening to Chewing It podcast.
If I was the cop, I'd be like, is it your horse?
Hey, pony fucker! So listen to the Chewing It podcast of the day, and you've seen Club Dread before. And I never noticed this, but you remember, I don't even remember the part where Juan Castillo is talking about how he got arrested for fucking a goat when he was a kid. And I never caught it, but Steve Lemmy mentioned it. But when he's telling the story, he tells the cops, we were just a couple of kids. And I never got it until I was listening to the Chewing It podcast. He was talking about the goat. Okay, that's enough for new business.
All right.
We can stop it there. I can go on and on because we got plenty, but we need to get to the meat of the show.
All right, well, let's take a break and we will be right back.
They went to Cancun. We went to your brother's in Poughkeepsie.
This Halloween, find monster game pieces in Pepsi products and Doritos brand tortilla chips. The right match can win you thousands of prizes, up to $1 million. Look for specially marked packages. It could change your life for good.
You never take out the garbage.
Play Pepsi Doritos Monster Match for monster money.
Frank!
From the people who brought you Halloween, more of the night he came home. Halloween 2. There is no place to hide. He will always find you. Halloween 2. More of the night he came home. Rated R. Now playing at a theater near you.
We're back.
We are. It's time to talk about some bad, bad guys.
Yes.
So, I'm not exactly sure how you created your list, but after we had talked, I sat down and I thought about it, and I started writing down some folks. And my wife asked me, hey, what are y'all talking about? And I told her what we were talking about. And she listed off some things that were kind of off the wall. But whenever she pointed it out, I was like, yeah, that's certainly in the show. So there's a couple in here that you're going to be like, wait, what? But, yeah.
A good movie villain helps a movie so much when it comes to, a lot of times when it comes to action movies, but any movie altogether, just to have a villain that's equally engaging as your protagonist is so much better for a movie. You know, someone that you can just, some elements you can relate to, but more than anything, you can respect them, I guess mm-hmm. you could say, because they are, whether they're brilliant or they're charismatic or they just, for whatever reason.
Or funny.
Right. Right.
Or look cool.
Or just to the point of being bad where it's just unbelievable that there's somebody that devious. You know, you just have respect for it.
Can't help but think of like Nicolas Cage in Face Off.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, shoot that guy. Somebody.
So you want to start off?
I don't know if I want to start off with a big one, or...
There's so many big ones, though. It's like... I'll start off if you want.
You want to hit it?
Do you recognize the name Norman Stansfield? We talked about him recently. From The Professional. Gary Oldman's
yes,
character
yes,
from
yes,
The Professional.
Yes, 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 yes.
Incredibly charismatic and controlling. He ran his crew with an iron fist, and he had extreme... He led with fear. And that made his crew very loyal to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an evil, didn't care motherfucker, dude. He's an excellent, excellent bad guy. And Gary Oldman did so much for that role. It was very impressive.
Well, yeah, and just Gary Oldman in multiple roles. Look at him as, I don't even remember his name, but as the white Rasta man.
Yeah, in True Romance.
In True Romance. I mean... The true bad guy in that movie was Christopher Walken, or at least his the drug dealer, his crew. But Gary Oldman is the one that's most memorable.
Right.
And he was a small-time bad guy, but he was so good at being a bad guy that he's the most memorable character.
That's just it. He wasn't even the main bad guy in the film. You know, the actual main bad guy in the film was played by, what's his name? Oh, my God. Foo Fighters.
Yeah, it's Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken, right. Yeah. But you remember that Gary Oldman character because it was so effective.
So, yeah, I mean, God, man, put Gary Oldman in all kinds of...
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
As Dracula.
Yeah.
Like, but we're talking like the best of the bad. So, my wife pointed out the little three trick-or-treaters, the minions from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
Oogie Boogie's the main big bad, but those little trick-or-treaters, they're the ones that caused so much strife by kidnapping Santa Claus after, you know, after they were told to leave him alone. And they're like, screw that, we're just going to do what we want to do. But... Those sorts of things where it's like, maybe, you know, over here is watch the birdie, but then you see these other characters over here that are doing something that's worse.
Right.
that drives the action. But no, I was going to point out Loki in, in the Thor movies and the Avengers.
Yeah.
You almost root for him. And Tom Hiddleston is such a good actor that, you know, just the kinds of things that he can do with his face that... I mean, how many times can you be taken by this guy? How many times can he trick you? But then you're almost willing to give him the benefit of the doubt just by, like, the way he quirks an eye a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of twitches his face and makes it look like he's a little bit sad, maybe a little bit remorseful. And it's almost hypnotic, the effect that he has, not just on the characters in the movie, but in the audience. Like, you know he's bad. He's not good. But, spoiler alert, whenever he meets his end in Infinity War, you mourn him.
Yeah.
You really feel bad.
You become attached to the character.
You know, you really feel bad. And you're also, like, not quite sure that he went, but you're still sad that he did anyway. And he died like four times in the different movies and series. And he keeps coming back. But every time he dies, you feel just as bad as he did. You know? He is a very well-written bad guy.
Yeah.
He's very well written antagonist. And whenever he does some heroic shit, you're like, hell yeah! You know, that's Loki, that's my boy. Like, so he's on my list for sure.
Okay.
Loki's a good big bad.
Now, how often do you see the bad guy win or get what he wants? Not too often.
Not too often.
Kevin Spacey is John Doe in the movie 7. Creepy as hell, scary as hell, and actually achieved what he wanted to achieve in that movie. He was a good bad guy. He was a good guy to go against for the antagonist. It was that was a great part played by him. Kevin Spacey's a good actor.
Verbal Kent and Kaiser Sose.
Yeah.
In The Usual Suspects, same exact situation. Right. He won.
Yeah.
He got away scot-free. He killed all those guys. He got his money. He got his revenge. And he's...
Right.
And you left the movie. You realize he made up the whole story. So everything he said is a lie. So the cops have nothing to go on.
Right.
Except that he looks kind of like a balding, somewhat middle-aged guy.
Well, at the end of 7, he's still John Doe. They still have no idea who this guy is.
Yeah.
He had no prints or anything. And he got what he wanted. It ended the exact way he wanted it to end. He wanted to die, and he wanted to be killed by...
So he can fulfill his art project.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw this one out there because... Maybe they're kind of a twofer, maybe even a threefer, but TV cartoon bad guys when we were a kid, Skeletor, Captain Cobra Commander, and Megatron.
Oh, yeah.
That's a trifecta of badassness. Like, I did not care about Duke and Scarlet. I kind of like Snake Eyes, but Cobra Commander's badass.
Yeah.
And I don't care, like... People will say different things about his mirror mask or versus his hood and, like, which is bad or ass. I think they're both cool.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see, like, just regular army grunts wearing a mirror mask in a blue costume, you know, screaming fools on a battlefield. Like, Cobra Commander was badass.
He was.
Skeletor. I mean...
Skeletor was awesome. That was an awesome villain.
Skeletor looks super cool. And if you're painting, like, obviously you're painting with a Filmation canvas, they're like, hey, market this guy to a bunch of 6-year-olds. You can't make him too scary, but you have the potential to make him really scary whenever those 6-year-olds grow up. You know, so I always wanted the bad guys. I always wanted more Cobra guys. I always wanted more bad Transformers, Soundwave, you know, those guys. Because they made an impact. They were more, to me, they were more important than
the rest of the
crew. Autobots.
Okay. From the movie Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter. Another one that got away in the end. And you know what's amazing is, you know, in that movie, the movie's an hour and a half long. It's between an hour and a half and 2 hours long. He's only in the movie for 17 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But he is the part of the movie that you remember.
That everybody remembers.
Yes. He made that movie, man. He was a perfect, perfect villain. He controlled everybody. He knew how to manipulate so well. Man.
And he didn't even kill anybody.
Yeah.
Well, at the very end he did.
Yeah, but he mainly had people kill. He convinced people, manipulated them to do the things that he wanted them to do. That's a creepy bad guy for sure.
Don't know if he really counts as a bad guy because it was kind of just a tragic situation. But the Brundlefly.
Yeah.
That's
a good one. It's a very good one.
He's going insane. His body's falling apart, transforming. You're pulling for him. You're hoping he's going to manage to get out, but you know he's not.
Right.
You know what he went through is irreversible. And so... But because he's a sympathetic, because Jeff Goldblum's a really good actor,
yeah.
Because he's such a sympathetic character, you kind of hope for the best, even as the horror is going on.
You don't
want to
see him die.
Yeah. You know he's going to. You know he has to. There's no way that this abomination can continue. I mean, it's right. eventually going to just turn into this giant monster, and he's going to lose all bit of himself that ever was. But you still don't want him to die. You hope that he'll be saved. But he's still puking on people and melting their hands and stuff. So.
All right. This guy has made so many movies where you can find very good villains, but I'm going to go ahead and throw in Annie Wilkes, played by Kathy Bates in Misery. She was a good villain. Mm-hmm. She was a psychopath to the level of good old Norman Bates. I mean, bitch was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And evil. She killed children. You know, this was an evil, evil, evil woman. And but she was so split personality
that she couldn't cuss.
She thought she was doing good half the time. She couldn't curse. You know, it's she was she killed kids, but she wouldn't curse. What kind of shit is that?
Mm-hmm.
She great, great villain played by a great actress. I mean, she blew up after that role, man. It was
that role absolutely made her.
Like, yeah. Oh yeah.
I thought about it, and I thought about it, and then I thought about it some more. But I'm not even going to name his characters. Well, I'll name his characters in a second. But literally anything Alan Rickman was in. Alan Rickman.
Oh, yeah.
Is the perfect villain.
Yes.
Even in movies where he was not where he was playing, like, there's some movie called Love Actually where he plays kind of a, it's not a romantic lead, but he's like a family man, like kind of having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
He's still an effective bad guy.
He's so charismatic. The dude bleeds charisma. I mean, it's just unreal how he's so engaging when you watch him. He's an awesome dude.
I mean, Robin Hood was not a very good movie at all. It was not a good movie. The Kevin Costner Robin Hood. It was so flawed. They had accents going in and out. The story was ridiculous. But Sheriff of Nottingham is on, like, in the top 10 of greatest movie villains of all time in almost every list that you look at. Like, the Sheriff of Nottingham was perfect in that film.
Yeah.
In that movie that was not very good.
Right.
You know, but he saved it pretty much single-handedly. Hans Gruber.
You can't ask for a better villain than that, dude.
That charismatic, whenever and the name escapes me, but whenever the salesman,
the cocaine guy,
yeah, whenever he's like, John, they're gonna kill me, and then just that look, like, ooh, that's a good idea, and you just know, like, this guy's dead,
like he's not getting out of the room alive.
And he didn't even say anything. He didn't say anything in that scene. He's on the phone, like, John, he's gonna kill me, blah blah blah. And John's like, don't do this, man. Hunter Man didn't say a word.
Right.
He made a couple facial expressions and picked up his gun. And you're just like, what an evil guy. And then he's later revealed not to be a bad guy, but through the entire Harry Potter series, he's a bad
guy. He's on the wire.
He's
yeah.
a scary, yeah, he's bad, dark, you know. He's a Death Eater. He was Voldemort's right-hand man.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to indicate otherwise until the second half of the last book that tells you that he wasn't that. But throughout the entire series, he's someone to be feared, and he's scary. He's scarier right. than the main bad guy.
Right.
Because he lives in your house. He's one of your teachers, you know?
All right, one of my favorites, probably one of the most evil men that I've ever seen in a movie with a personality. Because there are some that are more evil that are killing machines that don't have personalities, but as far as having personality, is Alex DeLarge from the Clockwork Orange movie. He is just the embodiment of a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still so charismatic, his parents think that he can do no wrong. He can still go downstairs to the record shop, pick up women, and take them upstairs and have sex. But in the end, he still feels the need to rape women, to kill, to bludgeon, to terrorize. He is the embodiment of an evil person that is so manipulative. It's just unreal. Leads by fear with his crew. in the end, you know, you think that he's going to get better, but in the end, you can see where it's just coming back, it's bubbling back up to the surface.
Yeah, it's just, well,
he can't stop. He's pure evil.
He's just a bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so not necessarily. Well, The Walking Dead is full of. Walking Dead is full of bad guys, but there's two of them specifically, and I'm not talking about Jeffrey Dean Morgan or the Governor. Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a bad guy, and he's a bad guy through the entire show. He has a little. He has a point of redemption, like an hour before he dies. But throughout the entire thing before, he's a shithead. And he kills indiscriminately.
Yeah.
But you love him. And whenever he does have his little touch of redemption, you actually feel for him, kind of like with Loki.
Yeah.
You're like, oh man, you know, it's like, he was a bad guy from the very first scene he was in, where they had to chain him to the pipe on
right,
the roof.
Right.
And he ends up cutting his hand off. Him, and then John Bernthal is Shane. In the first season, he's a good guy. But he loses his mind in the second one, and he has to make a kill that's either him or me. So he shoots the fat guy in the leg so that the walkers will catch him. Like, they'll fall on that guy instead of trying to help him over the fence. But he steadily gets worse. But he's one of the, like, he outshines everybody else in the cast.
Right.
Like, he's just that good at, and he's not necessarily crazy. I mean, he's a little bit crazy. Who wouldn't be in that situation? But he's not, like, he's not playing psycho. He's not Psycho Mike, you know, from Suicidal Tendencies.
Right.
He's just at the end of his rope.
Yeah.
You know, and he's really good.
You might remember this name from a little movie called American Psycho with Patrick Bateman. It's another excellent, excellent villain. He's just a piece of shit. Another guy that is just evil, but exceptionally charismatic and can get just captures the whole screen. I mean, that character itself is just, it's pretty impressive, and the acting with that role was incredible. But he's another one, for sure.
Batman kills the Joker. So here's one of those that's a little bit off the wall. But Delia Dietz.
Yeah.
In Beetlejuice.
Yes.
She wasn't a bad guy per se, but she is certainly an antagonist.
Oh, yeah.
To both Lydia and to the Maitlands. It's safe to say that if she wasn't there, none of the rest of it would have happened. Like, she's the reason that, first of all, that Lydia's so sad and, like, ostracized. She's tearing apart their house, so that's what got the Maitlands
running. She has no respect for
anything.
It's all about her.
She's just super selfish. You know, you can mention Otho in there, but he's such a minor character, but you think of Beetlejuice as the antagonist, but not really. Beetlejuice is kind of an antidote to Delia's self-centeredness.
Mm-hmm.
When they run out of options because they can't get Delia to stop messing with stuff, then they call in Beetlejuice.
Right.
Then they have to deal with him, you know?
Then it gets worse. Yeah, she causes it to get worse. John Kramer from the Saw series. This dude was so badass in death, he was still able to continue his master plan. He was just a brilliant mind that was just... And what's bad is, he was evil, but the way he justified his evil with his wife dying of cancer, he almost makes himself an empathetic character, but then he doesn't stop. You know, he just continues doing what he's doing, you know,
yeah.
To the point where you stop having empathy for the guy. And then, like I said, even in death, he's continuing his is huge. His plan, his main objective. We're at with time.
We're good on time.
Okay.
Well, there's another one my wife threw up there. It's an unexpected one. But Judge Doom.
Yeah.
From Roger Rabbit.
He was scary, dude.
He's a scary guy. In a cartoon.
First time seeing him on the film, it was scary as hell, dude.
Like, and Christopher Lloyd is so likable. That putting him in a position of a bad guy and then having that weird his weird movements and stuff, because under the coat and stuff he is an animation.
Yeah.
So the whole Christopher Lloyd is just a mask. So that's even creepier.
Right.
But yeah, like, he was a scary guy. And I'd forgotten, like, because Roger Rabbit's kind of a lighthearted, I mean, it's not lighthearted, it's a hard-boiled detective, yeah, you know. But you don't.
But you don't. It's a cartoon. It's an animated movie. You don't expect it to be what it is.
Right.
It's an old school one for you, but the Wicked Witch of the West. She was mean, evil, and
scary. But you didn't really root for her.
No, no. But she was a good villain. She was a bitch. Tony Montana from Scarface.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You respect him because he came from nothing. Even though the way he got to where he was just bad. He didn't know anything else. You know, it's all that he knew. He went out, of course, in a hail of bullets and everything, and he didn't win in the end. But he's a character that you remember, and you can not necessarily feel empathy for, but feel for. You know, it's sad when he dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was Cuban immigrant that came from like I said, from shit. And, but he was a cruel motherfucker, dude.
Yeah.
He went through some shit, though. You know, in that movie, one of the scenes, of course, that stands out for everybody is the chainsaw scene in the bathroom in the hotel. Some scary shit. Mm-hmm. That was a rough movie.
And that's when I really threw that dude out the helicopter and...
Yeah, when he went down to Colombia to talk to the drug lord.
Yeah, and he threw that guy out of the helicopter, like, what do you think about that? He's like, yeah, I think he's the reason that my friend got killed, so I'm cool with that. Like, just completely he's a little bit scared, but he's just like, screw that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
He understands. You know, he understands that you rule by fear. That's what you got to do.
Let's talk about some of the villains that have transcended villainhood and then become like the king of their own franchises. Because there's villains in, like you say, like Tony Montana. You know, he's a protagonist in the movie. I guess the villain in that movie is himself. He's a bad guy, but it's told from his perspective, so yeah. He's technically the protagonist. But like, you know, Friday the 13th series,
Jason.
You've got 11 movies. I guess, are we to 12 or is there actually 13? But anyway.
This, including reboots, is 13.
You've got the original, which isn't Jason. So starting from 2, then going to 9, 10, 11. So there's 12.
Are you including Freddy versus Jason?
Okay, so there's the 13th. Yeah. And then with 3, but... Yeah, you feel for the campers, but after a while...
You start looking forward to seeing Jason. You want to see him on the screen.
You just want to see Jason come out, right, and do his thing. Same thing with, like, Jaws. You know, it's like, yeah, you don't want to be in the water when he's biting, but you want to see the shark doing some biting. Right. Same thing, Michael Myers.
Well, I wouldn't put Michael Myers in the same category. Michael Myers... It got to the point Friday the 13th where you looked forward to seeing Jason, and it got to the point where it wasn't as scary to see him. Michael Myers is still scary to see him pop out.
True.
I was listening to Dead Man's Tome the other day, and he was doing his top 10 movies, and Halloween was his number one. He didn't even have Friday the 13th on the list. And I was thinking to myself, you know, Halloween has stayed, except for Season of the Witch, has kind of stayed pure to its roots, where it's remained a scary film as opposed to being campy.
Right. Well, true. Except for I can't name, except for the babysitters in the first one, and Laurie Strode, basically.
Yeah.
I can't really name any of the victims.
Right.
So that's what I mean. And not to go off on a Friday the 13th tangent, but, you know, watching those early movies, they're frightening. But you still are interested whenever you see Jason. And it's not that you're necessarily rooting for him in the first couple sequels, but, like, by the fourth one...
You're ready to see who's going to kill next.
Yeah, you're ready to see him come out of the woods and, like, wearing the mask and do something cool. I was going to say, like, the Predator. The first one is an effective horror movie. Seems like an action film because they're commandos in the jungle.
Yeah.
But he's picking them off one by one, very much Friday the 13th style.
Yeah, a great white shark style. Can't stop.
And you don't see what he is. You don't know what he is until, like, the very end. But even if you take the very end of that, there was nothing showing the Predator, not even its mask, in any of the advertising for the first movie, because it was a Schwarzenegger joint.
Right.
In part two, the Predator's on the top of the building, you know, holding his little staff up.
Right.
And anything that's been done since regarding the Predator, the Predator's front and center. And the cast is just fodder.
Right. Well, you even got to the point with the Aliens versus Predator series where the Predator turned into the protagonist.
Yes.
And the Alien's the evil one. You get empathy for the Predator. Because you understand his history now and what he's trying to do. And just, I love the way they put those two franchises together, dude. It's pretty awesome. You see my little xenomorph going after my Predator up there on the shelf. Pennywise. Another just fascinating bad guy. Scary as hell. And no, I forgot to mention earlier, I'm sure you heard, Texas Frightmare has announced Tim Curry's going to be coming.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Boom, our old buddy Boom, had mentioned this on a thing today. The original It, the best part of that movie is Tim Curry.
Oh, of course.
The rest of the movie is kind of boring. Unless Tim Curry is in the scene or involved in it, it's not that exciting. Tim Curry made that original movie.
Yes.
It's the only thing you want to see. The remake was a lot better in that all the scenes were good. They went together. You didn't lose interest. You didn't get bored with anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that original It was all about Tim Curry. You know, I'm so excited that he's going to be in Texas Frightmare. Right? But, you know, I've been seeing, he's real sick right now. And, of course, people with Texas Frightmare, the people that go to Texas Frightmare are a different breed altogether. A lot of them are understanding. He's not going to have a table set up. You can take pictures with him, and you can give him stuff to take to autograph and email it back to you. But there's, like, no table visits or anything like that. And apparently, he had a stroke recently. And so that's why he signs stuff in private, but whenever they send you your article back, they actually send you a picture of him signing your article, so it's authenticated. But he was at Fan Expo. And people were freaking out, bitching about it and everything. Everybody with Texas Frightmare understands. They have so much respect for Tim Curry. And it was funny as, when you think of Tim Curry, what's the first movie you think of?
It.
Me, Clue.
See, I think it just depends.
I fucking love Clue.
Because there's so many people that are just like Rocky Horror.
Right.
And fair enough. I mean, he is, that's another thing. Is Susan Sarandon is a much bigger star than Tim Curry has ever been. But when you say Rocky Horror, Tim Curry,
right.
Because he stole that show. And I'm not even a fan of Rocky Horror, but he's magnetic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and yeah, the dude's just...
He's exceptional, man.
A
he's
super
an exceptional
talent.
Person. For sure. Okay, who you got next? Sorry for the segue.
Oh, dude. We just keep on going. One villain, this is another one my wife threw up there that's just like, well, our house is full of Disney princesses, two little girls, we watch Disney films all the time. So you're constantly dealing with whatever's on. So of course, Disney goes out of their way to make their villains really bad. Or at least archetypically bad. You know, there's really no good in the villains.
Right.
But there's one that just kind of is off, and that's Gaston in Beauty and the Beast. We started the show, you know, talking about, like, Chris Hardwick, and he got got fired for being a bad boyfriend.
Stereotypical bad boyfriend.
Gaston's biggest thing is that he's egotistically bad boyfriend. He's like the jock that doesn't think. But in any other movie, he'd be the good guy. In any other movie, he'd be the good guy.
Right.
When told that Beauty, you know, that Belle had been, and her father both, had been captured and put in the dungeon in this mystical castle guarded by this evil beast, Gaston's the first one to be like, screw that. Let's go take care of this thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he doesn't really do anything that like makes him a bad guy, but just because of perspective, he's put in that position and he dies.
Yeah.
You know? But that movie really kind of flips the switch on that relationship between antagonist and protagonist, because literally any other movie,
he'd be the good guy. He'd be the Prince Charming.
He'd be the hero. And he'd be a failed hero because he died.
Right.
But he at least tried. You know, just because her opinion was different, flipped the switch on everybody else.
Right.
But it's one of those things that you just, you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, now you know.
Well, while we're on Disney, about Scar from The Lion King.
He was a bad guy.
Yeah.
Premeditated murder, you know, overthrowing the government.
Family.
Yeah. Overthrowing the government, taking over.
He was a pretty badass bad guy for Disney. Right?
And then messing things up pretty badly.
Oh, yeah.
He thought he could rule. He couldn't, you know. I mean, there's so many great villains out there.
Freddy Krueger. If you look at horror, there's just tons of them. That Freddy Krueger's another one that people at this point, it's like Jason. They want to see what Freddy's going to do next. You know, they love him. They love Freddy Krueger. Let me go ahead and give you my, it's my top two. But I'll go ahead and do the first one first is Joker. The Joker's awesome, dude.
In my opinion, the Joker's been a little overplayed.
Yeah, but Joker's been overplayed, but certain versions of the Joker are better than others, of course. And, of course, Heath Ledger is going to be one of the top ones of all time. Personally, I prefer the Jack Nicholson Joker. I think I'm just because I'm more... it was my first one, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So that one is the one that I much prefer, but the Joker's a badass, dude.
The Joker is. I'm talking, like, I guess... between Batman movies and the comic books and stuff, it's like how bad could you actually make somebody? And like they've made him about as possibly bad as it can possibly be, you know. But no, he's probably one of the most famous villains of. It's like I'm a big Superman fan, but I almost can't stand his supporting cast. I don't like Lex Luthor.
Right.
I don't much like Lois Lane. I don't like Jimmy Olsen.
No.
I like Superman himself being a badass and then move on.
Right.
Batman has such an awesome cast of villains, but almost any one of them can make it our list. But Joker, obviously,
is the top one.
Is the top of them.
That's for sure. You got another one?
Nope.
I'm going to end it with this guy. Just one of the greatest villains of all time. Someone that you became empathetic for after a while, but Darth Vader. Darth Vader is the epitome of badass.
He was, to me. The prequels lost me.
I don't watch them.
See, I don't either. But
so to me, Darth Vader is
the original Vader. Darth Vader through the first series. I did not need, like you said, I didn't need to know how the cake was baked.
Yeah.
I didn't need to know how the sausage
was made.
Just
give me the cake.
Just give me the cake. He was cool enough as some kind of grizzled old black, you know, dark knight from days of yore. The legends surrounding him could be many. And now, any one of them could be true. But making him a wishy-washy little bitch...
That I can't stand now. At the end of Rogue One, he actually... I love it because... it leads off into A New Hope, so you understand now why he busted on that ship and he was really pissed off. in Rogue One just show just how badass Darth Vader is.
Mm-hmm.
He's just wow.
True that.
He definitely
that was
more respect.
Have you seen that video of that girl watching the end of Rogue One? I'll show it to you. Look it up on YouTube. It's like just Google or YouTube. Say, you know, overly excited girl Rogue One. It is the cutest thing you'll ever see. It is so awesome. But it's just this this girl watching the end of Rogue One when they all die, and she's crying because the characters die, and then it pans up into space and she's like, what's this? And it's a Darth Vader scene, and she's just like and she's like bawling and just like, oh my god, it's so cute. It's so awesome. When I first saw it, I was like, I don't think there's one of us that saw that scene and didn't feel the same way.
Right.
It was so great.
It gave me chills, dude. It gave me chills, man, watching it. It was just... But that's it for me. There are more... We could talk about villains.
All night.
But those are just some of the best, you know, if... anybody has something they feel as though we missed or anything, let us know.
Well, let's go ahead and put a fork in episode 96, The Best of the Bad. What do you think? Do you agree with us? Disagree with us? What are we going to do? Because there's only so many villains out there. We can talk about them. Throw out your best ones. Comment on the Facebook post and tell us what you think. And until then, keep it scary.
Later.
Spain, we are alive.